Welcome back, everybody, into Bills Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me tonight, as always, is Luca. Luca, you are not only a Bills guy like myself, you are also our hockey guy. So I have a question for you. What's more impressive, blowing a four-goal regulation lead to a Stan Kroenke team or scoring 42 points against a Stan Kroenke team and losing in regulation?
Oh, bringing the Stan Kroenke into that is just an absolute sprinkle on top of a shit.
Good news, everybody. Buffalo doesn't have a basketball team, so they're not going to have to play the Nuggets.
Oh, geez. Nice connection there as well for yourself. Blowing a four-goal lead. I mean, that you can't be blowing four-goal leads and losing in regulation just to really put the dagger in. Losing in regulation when you were already losing with, I think, like 8 minutes to go in that game as I sat there. That was tough. But overall, both are just absolute shit styes. It is a perfectly coiled shit on an ice cream cone with sprinkles on top that you just provided me here to kick off the podcast.
How bad of a loss was today, Luca? 44-42, the Rams lose to the, or Bills lose to the Rams.
It is a heart-crushing loss, but it's not soul-crushing. And what I mean by that, for anyone that's confused after that statement, is it heartbreaking? Is it heart-crushing? Absolutely. The way it happened, the performance that Josh Allen put forward and showed everyone on the Game of the Week Fox spot, just like the Eagles game last year in the Fox Game of the Week, just like plenty of these Game of the Year candidates that have happened with the Bills over years past, where Josh Allen is just an absolute freak, elite player, and they somehow came out on the losing side. This one was historic. Yes, it's heartbreaking, but for future considerations, for future reasons, for what still is there to be had for this Bills team, there is nothing that you should come from this game. At least offensively, of course, but there's even defensively, it's like credit where credit's due. McVay is an elite play caller for a reason, and he schemed up a perfect day in my eyes against this scheme and understood the assignment. This is not something that feels like it's dejecting or soul crushing where all hope is lost and it's just not going to happen for this team yet again for yet another season. We're just now kind of in a situation where, on one hand, Josh Allen just locked up the MVP, it feels like, knock on wood. But on the other, somehow that statement of an argument just happened in a heartbreaking loss because of a couple boneheaded decisions, we'll call it, and then just not being able to, in the classic sense of the phrase, we were not able to stop a nosebleed as Allen was doing his thing. So, it's definitely in the heart-crushing category, but not soul-crushing, Josh.
Speaking of heart-crushing and soul-crushing, the Kansas City Chiefs are currently in a game right now while we're recording this. So if you're watching on YouTube, first of all, thank you. Hit that like button right down there if you would, and subscribe, and we would really appreciate you. Let us know in the comments that you did that, and we'll shout you out on the next show. Luca and I are watching this this Chiefs-Chargers game right now. So if you see our faces make reactions, that's what's going on. So anyway, okay, Luca, I agree with everything you said. And I think we're going to get into a lot of things tonight. We're going to talk about, one, you said it, how impressive the Rams were. They deserve their flowers for sure. We're going to talk about some coaching blunders made by Sean McDermott in this game. One that we definitely agree on at being a blunder. Another one that I think we're on different sides of the fence of it, but not a great McDermott day. We can agree on that. And we're going to talk about the lack of a run game. We're going to talk about the defensive struggles the Bills had, the special team struggles the Bills had. We'll get into all of it. I'm going to start off with an optimistic point of view here. And yes, I understand the Bills lost a game. They hadn't lost a game in their previous seven, and now they lost one today. And it feels like maybe in a lot of ways that they gave up a chance to catch the Chiefs in the one seed. All of that can be true. But I'm going to tell you something that happened in this game that makes me optimistic, that makes me potentially more optimistic than I even was in the Bills' previous two games where they beat the Chiefs by two scores and blew out the Niners. Because in the game against the Chiefs, all the Bills did, I think, was play a strong game against a team that's reeling, that's begging to get beat every week, and they beat them. A game against the Niners, the Bills dominated the line of scrimmage, but to my eyes and in my heart, I'm wondering, did we just watch a team quit out there against the Bills? So it's impressive. You beat the Niners and, you know, they came back and did well against, but there was always that in my brain. What the Bills had to tap into today, that they haven't had to tap into much this season, Luca, because they've built this good offensive line. They've built this strong running game. And this defense that's now getting bodies back, Dwayne Carter was back today under McDermott, has been excellent this season, has shut down almost every opponent they've played, with the exception of a couple games. On a day where the defense couldn't stop a nosebleed, on a day where James Cook, let me get the numbers here, averaged 3.3 yards per carry on 6 carries, and then Curtis Samuel had the only other non-Josh Allen carry, 1 carry for 1 yard, and special teams gives up a blocked punt for a touchdown, and the Bills are giving up 44 points on the other side of the score without Dalton Kincaid, without Keon Coleman. We saw something today we haven't had to see much this season. We saw Josh Allen put the Superman cape on, put the team on his back, put up 42 points. He accounted for all 6 touchdowns, and the Bills were within an eyelash of losing a game that, quite honestly, nobody on the field besides Josh Allen and maybe Khalil Shakir deserved to win. And that includes the coaching staff. And I'm not telling you that the Josh Allen Superman golf club to pull out of the bag is a sustainable plan for victory. It certainly is not. Go ask the Bengals. Joe Burrow has to play perfect every single week to give that team a chance to win, and it's still not enough. It wasn't enough for the Bills today. So this isn't a formula for success. But I think the larger sample size of this season tells us that that's not going to be the formula for success. They ran into a buzzsaw today. But it was comforting to me, Luca, even in defeat, to see that Josh Allen cape, that club, get pulled out of the bag that they haven't had to rely on much this season, and that club is still there. And in golf terms, it was 400 yards right down the fairway, and it wasn't beautiful. There was some off-script plays. There were some clunky-looking runs. But Josh Allen did everything he could to keep his underwhelming team in a game today that any normal human quarterback would have lost by 3 touchdowns.
It's funny you bring this up to kind of lead off the episode when it be outside of the jokes. Not only does the Josh Allen kind of Superman cape exist, Josh, this game right here is an example that Superman cape might be the best version of itself to date. And I mean, what you have to comparison and to pull from is still Hall of Fame, just top class worthy. 13 seconds game was just the absolute peak, it felt like, where Josh Allen was the greatest human on earth, essentially, that could throw a football and just everything could work. And honestly, like, if I compared that 2021 playoff Josh Allen at Arrowhead to the Josh Allen of today, this one blows that one out of the water, in my opinion. This Josh Allen was, to every letter of the word, unstoppable. Mm-hmm. There was absolutely the only thing stopping Josh Allen from even better of a day was Josh Allen missing a couple throws that he himself clearly recognizes he would like back, because that would have set up this team a lot better overall. And I cannot believe that we live in a world where, as you've said, break glass in case of emergency, when the Bills got to have it, we have that.
Right.
It's not even, you know, a Lamar kind of makes a splash play or two. It's not even that. It is just the complete holy shit. This guy can dominate anyone at any moment in time, even at their best, because the Rams out the gate, clearly to me, were the absolute best version of themselves defensively. I thought they were extremely on point, very impressive. We're working really well, where I think that's why it kind of stumbled out of the gates, where they were truly throwing a lot at the Bills that maybe they didn't expect, or that they, you know, they did expect, but were just executing at an absolute elite level. So from there, it took them a second to kind of get their bearings. It took Josh Allen a second to get his bearings. But once he figured it out, once he understood what he was seeing, he was truly unstoppable. And this was a game, Josh, where ultimately, I mean, the final whistle goes, the handshakes are happening, and it's like, barring something I cannot forecast, Josh Allen is this year's MVP. And to me, I don't even know how close it is. And I really even think Saquon Barkley putting on an insane performance down the stretch and possibly breaking the rushing record still wouldn't see him get the MVP over Josh Allen, because of, you can say, oh, it's a, you know, a historical rushing season. It's like Josh Allen just put back-to-back performances of something that no other player in this entire league's history has ever done in a single game. And he's doing things week in, week out that you're like, no one else, not even your Mahomes, no one it can do. And you have Dan Patrick, who feels like one of the most critical people in the national media and is not going to overreact or say anything that's just kind of crazy, doing something where he is comparing Josh Allen in his eyes to John Elway 1-to-1. And people doing something like that, in that vein, in that mindset, that truly don't like to overreact or give comps like that, to me, that speaks a lot. Because now it's like everyone sees it, everyone acknowledges it, and I don't think you're going to hear too much negativity coming from this game from the Bills because of just how good Josh Allen, how good 17 was, and will probably continue to be as we move forward.
I think for Josh Allen to lose the MVP, he'd have to, the Bills would have to fall out of the top two seeds. Now, they might be after this week. I truly don't know who has a tiebreaker between them and Pittsburgh, but I do know Pittsburgh next three games, you're talking at Arrowhead, not in any particular order, Philadelphia and Baltimore. So, you know, I feel like the Bills would have to really stumble to lose that to Pittsburgh. And that doesn't just mean losing next week to the Lions. I think they'd have to,
I just want to say it's at Steelers, not at Arrowhead, just for what it's
okay for. Oh, at Steelers, and then okay, so
Texans Pittsburgh at Arrowhead Chiefs. Yep.
And then they the go Broncos. To no, I'm not talking about the Chiefs, I'm talking about,
oh sorry, the Steelers.
My Steelers bad. Schedule. Yeah. So I think the Bills have to fall out of the top two, because historically the MVP, if it goes to a quarterback, is the quarterback of one of the top two seeds. But, you know, I think today was a good reminder for folks, maybe even us guilty of it, recency bias, of you, the Bills piling up win after win and impressive wins after, and James Cook having good days and Khalil Shakir and Amari Cooper and Keon Coleman, the defense. You start looking at this roster and you're like, oh, man, the Bills are a complete team. They are a complete team. But I think today was a good reminder of the questions we had about this team coming into the season. The questions we had about the defense, the questions we had about them losing six captains, the questions we had about, are there enough weapons around Josh Allen? They played today without Dalton Kincaid and Keon Coleman. And this was a good reminder for those folks of like, yeah, but that guy, that quarterback, he gives them a shot every single week. And, you know, we've seen enough playoff games, enough Super Bowls in our lifetime to see the best defenses in the world can give up 40 points in the playoffs, because you're playing the best of the best. The Bills might be in a scenario in the playoffs where their defense just can't stop the other team. We've seen that scenario play out before. And it's just nice to know the Bills have that club in their bag. All right, Luca, how will this game be remembered? Is this going to be simply the Puka Nacua game? Is it just going to be called the Rams game? We'll all know what we're talking about. Is it the 42-point loss game? What is this game, the Josh Allen six-touchdown loss game? How will this game be remembered 5 years from now?
I'm going to honestly just call it the MVP loss. Like, that's what I would call it. This is where Josh Allen cemented himself as MVP, and yet we still lost. That's what it was. I think the Puka Nacua one makes a lot of sense, because quite honestly, if the Rams didn't have Puka Nacua, they're not winning this game. That is very abundantly apparent to me.
When he got hurt late, it felt like a gift from the gods. Not that you ever want to hear anybody see anybody get hurt. We all get it. When it looked like he was going to miss the rest of the game, as somebody who had watched that entire game, you're thinking, maybe now we have a chance to stop them.
I will say this though. I don't know if I was the only one, but immediately in my head, and I said it in the living room, I was like, this guy looked like he broke his collarbone in a game last season. And I think it was a separated shoulder or a sprain of some sort. And yet he came back and played the entirety of the second half. And I remember, because it was part of a fantasy situation, but overall, I think he had like another 80 yards receiving and a touchdown with a separated or sprained shoulder. So I was like, this guy's probably coming back. He's just going to try to get tolerant to the pain. because that's the kind of guy he is. And boy, what a weapon it is to have someone that apparently has tree trunks of legs, can get downfield and make absolutely unreal catches on the sideline with just worldly body control. I mean, talk about a fifth round pick home run. I don't know how else to say it. Puka, I can't speak highly enough about Puka Nacua. It is just like, this guy is a freak. This guy's just so good. And the fact that he fell to the fifth round is just laughably awesome, to be quite frank. But anyways, I think the Puka Nacua one is definitely one that I think a lot of people will kind of point to if you're in a Bills circle. But why I say MVP loss is because you will think about the Bills even from an outsider perspective, and you will think about this game and you'll be like, Josh Allen was clearly the MVP and they still somehow found a way to lose the game. And, you know, for what it's worth, we'll get into it. But that's, to me, how I will remember it, because I think I could even speak to someone outside of a Bills circle, Josh, and be like, the MVP loss against the Rams, and everyone would be like, oh, when Josh Allen ran for three and threw for three and was just unstoppable. Yeah, I remember that game too.
And the other part of this, and people don't like to talk about it, especially if they don't play, a lot of people made their fantasy playoffs tonight because Josh Allen was their quarterback. Conversely, a lot of people are staying at home tonight because they went against Josh Allen in the game of really his life. If you want to feel worse about Puka Nacua, just remember that Justin Shorter was picked 25 picks ahead of him. But don't feel bad. The Rams had 3 5th round picks they picked ahead of Puka Nacua. Nobody knew how good he was going to be. It's the luck of the draft. You know, we don't, he's not Puka Nacua, folks, but we have an example of a 5th round success ourselves on our team, and Khalil Shakir, who is doing just fine. Puka Nacua looks like an all-time hit, and good for him. Good for the Rams. Bad for us on this very day. Luca, we got to talk about Sean McDermott. This to me was a bad McDermott game. Let's get into the one we disagree on later, but let's talk about now how the Bills handled their final drive of the game. Chiefs game. The Bills' final drive of the game, they had the ball. They're down by 2 scores. They're down by 10. They have all 3 timeouts, and they are driving down the field quickly. They get benefit of a pass interference on a 4th and 15, and they get the ball set up 1st and goal at the 1-yard line, Luca. And you were quick to tell me this is the Bills' best goal line play. And they ran it, and they didn't get the first down. And they proceed to call a timeout, which if you've watched enough football, you know that timeout at that point in time means now you have to get the onside kick. I hated it in live action. Tom Brady hated it in live action. I know you hated it in live action. I know you hate what you're watching right now in live action as the Chiefs are about to steal another game. Which, by the way, Chargers, you should just let them score if they're dumb enough to do it. Luca, what do we do with that timeout? Because to me, there's such a lack of awareness with that timeout. It's mind-boggling that McDermott, who I do think is usually fairly sharp, I know there's some bad playoff moments, but it's a little mind-boggling to me that McDermott would take a timeout there.
That is a moment that needs to be highlighted, circled, shown back. You want to talk about watching the tape back, Josh. If Terry Pegula wanted to do this, I would respect the hell out of him. You record that. You make Sean McDermott sit down and watch it. Do a rewind, fast forward of just McDermott panic timeouting. Just do that back and forth. And just go, we are hiring a game management specialist. And immediately go, there's going to be another voice in your ear. There's going to be another channel on the headset for you to need to communicate to that will discuss game situation management. That needs to happen. I don't know what it takes, but I'm sick of it. I'm sick of a head coach that has been around for a long time that in a moment runs the best play possible, which I 1000% agree with. Run that. Honestly, the only thing that pissed me off was the style of which they went about it, where it wasn't even like they were fully committed to it at first as addressing the ball. And then eventually you know, Allen motioned in, I think it was Davidson. So you had a singular push from the back, which ultimately I don't think that's why they failed to get it. I think just the Rams got a good push off the first snap. It is what it is. But for you to have that, like, off a penalty, you're setting it up. You know that's the play being called. He acknowledges it after the game. That is the best goal line play we have, and it is. You should understand that 12 to 15 seconds, which is the time it would take to have all of your guys reset. And if it takes longer because I've seen some argue, if it takes longer because they're laying on top of you and they're doing it, it's like, let the officials throw a flag. Then you get a free timeout. Let the officials throw a flag at certain point where they think it's egregious and they call a delay a game. Then you get a half yard, which, or half the distance, which would be like 2 inches at that point. You have the clock being stopped and then you just run it again anyways. That is still a hell of a lot better because I think math tells me, Josh, you correct me if I'm wrong, 15 seconds is less than 45. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Because that's how much a timeout costs you. It is the play clock, 40 seconds, plus the average time a play takes, which I think 5 seconds is a pretty safe assumption on average, 5 to 6 seconds.
Yeah.
So for you to sit there and panic, use a timeout, mm-hmm. understanding the play coming in, knowing that the difference of it was probably about 30 to 35 seconds. You have no idea what you're doing in game management. And that is Sean McDermott.
Speaking of timeout, I'm going to call timeout right now because we're about to have a viral moment on our podcast. The Chargers are going to block it. Block this game-winning field goal attempt, 31 yards, and we're going to celebrate live, and we're going to enjoy it. Boom, it is.
Oh, my God.
Did that?
It banked in. Insert Jesse Pinkman meme. He can't keep getting away with it.
I got to go throw up. All right. Back to the matter at hand.
He can't second keep getting away with it.
Streak
he eight. Can't. All right, move on.
We're going to move on. Okay. Yes, the timeout was atrocious. And to Luca's point, it doesn't matter how long it takes to run a play. It doesn't matter how long it takes the Bills to get lined up. Unless the Bills were to line up and literally drain all 40 seconds off the play clock, it's a net loss. So I'm a little bit different than Luca. I don't even love the quarterback sneak call there. I think you could be greedy and try to throw it. To Luca's point, though, it's your money play. You expect to make it, but everybody has to be on the same page. If you run that play, you get up and you run another play right away. Even if it's just as simple as spiking, you absolutely cannot burn a timeout there. The three timeouts are what made the game still a game. And then you put it down to just having to convert defensive stand, or I'm sorry, an onside kick, which obviously it's 7% in the NFL. Let's talk special teams real quick, because the Bills had a punt blocked return for a touchdown, which I know there's folks out there that are saying, well, if that didn't happen, the Bills would win. That was a 7-point swing. I would call timeout on that. Also, I would say, well, the Rams were still getting the ball and there was nothing at that point that told us that drive wasn't going to end in points anyway. Yeah. But Matthew Smiley, Luca, this is not his first rodeo when it comes to a WTF moment. And I would say that wasn't even his worst moment of the game, because punt blocks happen. It sucks when it happens to you. What cannot happen is your special team unit has 9 players on the field. The league allows you to have 11.
Oh, do they?
Up to 11. And it's so funny. I didn't realize it in live action. But I'm sitting there watching the Bills set up what I think is going to be an all-out block. And I only see 2 gunners on the field. And I'm thinking, okay, these guys are going to motion in. We've seen it 1,000 times in sports. I didn't even know if Codrington was back there because you can only see what's on TV. I'm thinking they're going to just rush all 11. You got to sell out for it. And then I'm watching the rush. And I'm like, boy, they're not getting a lot of push for sending everybody. Turns out that rush only had 6 people rushing. Because the gunners just, or the blockers for the gunners stayed out there. And Codrington's back there. And Codrington, as an aside, since the clock hit 0, feel free to pick up that ball, buddy. Let's see what you can do. Because the game's over if you don't. It's rolling around the end zone, and you're just trotting off the field, you know, throwing up the touchback signal. I don't know. Go pick it up and see what happens. Because otherwise, the game's over. That's not something I'm super mad about, but it kind of annoyed me in the moment. Matthew Smiley, Luca, what do we do with this guy?
He's got to be gone. Smiley's got to be gone. That everything. Codrington not understanding the assignment. If the punt gets off, You have to be returning this.
Yeah, you can. You have to catch it. I don't care if you fumble it. Nobody cares.
Catch it in your own end zone. Yeah. Don't care. Get the damn ball. This is last play. If you're the gunner block, you know, team, like you said, like I would have subscribed to have 11 people ready to block. Do a field goal block, essentially. Like, get out there and every motherfucker rush the damn punter. If you blast the punter and take a penalty, guess what? Doesn't matter. Game's over. Like, go get it. Like, that is it. And that decision comes from the special teams corner. That is his job and his decision to make. And to have a blunder, not only where that is not the message, whatever it is, like, you can have your returner in case it gets off and you want to see if something magical could happen. I'll take that. 10 blockers, one guy. I think any average individual can understand that concept. Do that. For the special teams coordinator not to do that, and not only to not do that, but then not even to make sure he has a head count that is what you need to be out there to have yourself at 11 individuals, inexcusable, just unbelievably dumb and fireable. That is, you are not good enough at your job at this level to get it done when it matters the most. Like, you, what do you do that collects a paycheck? Like, what kind of asset are you to this team that you cannot even organize these individuals to get things done when it actually matters? And I mean actually matters, because no, kick returns, I turned off the game, so I don't know what you're watching, unfortunately. But
we'll talk about it off air. I had a really inappropriate thought.
When the kick returns are happening mid game and stuff, you're setting it up, you're doing whatever it is. And if you want to talk about an ultimate edge of the third phase of the game, Josh, the Rams had clearly a design or an idea of what they wanted to achieve in the punt return game or block game, however you want to refer to it. They understood their assignment at every phase of it. And then they also even have picked something out where they recognized where they could actually achieve success in the kick coverage game by making sure they did something very specifically on kickoffs that they started to continuously do and make sure that ball was a low driving ball in the direction of Ray Davis, where it had to be picked up and managed with. And the only other time that it was a touchback, guess what? Because it landed in the landing zone, you don't get that at the 30. You get that at the 20. That is doing your job. That's what the Rams special teams coordinator did. The guy on the other side completely failed at every phase of his job and has shown that he continues to do this. And McDermott, now, you mentioned it before we started recording, you know, the national media might say, hey, this is another McDermott scapegoat. Anyone that's been following it along enough understands that this would extend far beyond being the scapegoat. This guy just showed yet another reason why he's not even worth having on the team or on this coaching staff, I should say, because he's basically collecting a paycheck and doing nothing. Sorry if you listen to this, Smiley, but buddy, get the F off of this coaching staff. You suck.
I heard something upstairs. I wanted to make sure everything's okay. It's important to remember the sequence of plays there too. There's the third down play by the Rams. They run the ball. McVay calls a timeout. And then he sends Stafford out there to run a play. And they call it, and they take a delay of game. Sorry, my wife heard the same thing. So there was like something fell outside upstairs, apparently. So it's not like there was the normal 40-second play clock and they rushed guys out there. Smiley had basically 3 minutes of real-time action to get things organized. So if you want to tell me, oh, they were setting up some kind of cutesy return and they had different guys out there, like maybe, you know, Shakir and James Cook just, you know, out there, you know, to kind of like be out there as decoys and you're going to throw the ball to them, whatever. You have a lot of time to get that message out there. This is my way of saying, Luca, there's no excuse for the disorganization we saw. I co-sign with you. I get the McDermott scapegoat argument, but this is unacceptable. And I know the national narrative will be McDermott found another scapegoat, but this guy, I mean, you could make a real argument, cost you a game and cost you a chance to win a game late. We've seen crazier things happen in the NFL. I'd love to see the Bills have a chance to execute a punt block there. We saw a punt block earlier in the game. You just never know. And when you don't give yourself a chance, then you don't give yourself a chance. Let's talk about something else that you might be irritated with McDermott on. The defense was 9 for 11 on third downs. 9 for 11, Luca. I don't know that I've ever seen that in an NFL game. The Rams had almost 40 minutes of possession in this game. And now look, I'm going to say this. It's so easy for us to focus on what the Bills do. It's always about, oh, the Bills were bad. They couldn't do this. They couldn't do that. What I saw today out of the Rams was Matt Stafford playing at his absolute ceiling. He was throwing some passes that were completely unguardable. There were passes that just beat perfect coverage and hit Puka Nacua or Cooper Kupp in the hands, and they basically had sticky hands, and they weren't dropping the ball. And then there was that ridiculous toe tap on the sideline by Nacua. You saw three guys today, Stafford, Nacua, and I'll throw Cooper Kupp in there too because he had some big plays. And then, you know, you even saw it with their running backs. The guys made plays, and you have to give them credit. When Stafford's throwing like that, when he looks like that, there's not many players in the entire sport that are better than him. And the Bills, unfortunately, ran into that today. But Luca, overall, just not an acceptable effort by the Bills. 320 yards through the air, 2 touchdowns. And then Kyren Williams and Blake Corum went for 130-ish yards, 131 yards combined rushing. Defense was pretty leaky today.
Pretty leaky, to say the least.
Pretty leaky.
I mean, and it's interesting how you phrased it perfectly, because it's like pretty leaky, while also I still think like a Christian Benford had a good day overall. Like, you had individuals on that defense where I'm like, yeah, Christian Benford had a great day. You mentioned there were just unguardable passes, and it felt like even an individual like Christian Benford was just unable to make the impact plays you see him, because Stafford, again, to your credit, just played at his absolute best and was putting the ball in undefendable or non-defendable areas. And just receivers were also making incredible plays. There is a joke in there somewhere also, by the way. You know, you mentioned that the Rams went, it was it 9 for 11 on third down, I believe is what exactly what you said. There's a Sean McDermott in there somewhere, joke in there somewhere, but I will digress and not touch that one at all. Overall, we've credited Sean McDermott for a lot of things, mainly against the likes of the Dolphins and such, where he's able to kind of execute perfectly as a defensive mind and just get the offensive team on the other side to just not work. McVay gets everything that he saw today. He knows exactly what he needed to do. There's a reason you saw that same damn Nacua flare out screen happen probably 4 or 5 times, and it worked successfully every time, because that was clearly a hot check or something that McVay recognized. Hey, if we get this look, if we have these individuals in these places, if, you know, whatever it is, him and Stafford were on the same page where it's like, if the opportunity presents itself to what you are seeing, this is what we're going to be going with. And he would just recognize it and execute it perfectly. And McDermott, Bobby Babich, all of them, they could not adjust. And that's also something that they normally are very good at. And I mentioned something to you as well before we got on air. A frustration point I had with this was, this is the first year where we've seen McDermott more willing to switch into man. And it's been credited recently where it's like, hey, they have these guys where they're comfortable enough to man up, see what they have, so on and so forth. And even before the Rasul injury, it was just all zone. And I believe Matt Stafford to be one of, if not the best quarterback against zone coverage. He can absolutely pick it apart, even with pressure in his face. He has years and years and years of evidence of this. Like, he has just always been able to do that. And you refused to give him anything else. And that was why it felt like the Rams offense with that and McVay's scheme and everything going on, the Bills just were unwilling to kind of adjust, change, or do anything to maybe create stops due to confusion or create the problems with the Rams at any point in time. The Rams offense didn't stall out one moment until probably early to mid fourth quarter. That was the first time where I genuinely believed that the Rams offense was finally starting to not necessarily struggle, but at least not execute at the high level like it was. And then we were able to get them in third and longs and stuff, or fourth and longs, which then, unfortunately, you would have a decision or two that you would make a boneheaded decision on that would see yourself still allow them to continue to drive the ball or whatever it might be that ultimately cost you this game. So it's just one of those things where a tip of the cap to Sean McVay, a tip of the cap to the Rams offense as a whole. They were at their absolute peak as well. But boy, if there's a time where you have a defensive coach and a great defensive coordinator and you want to see something happen as it wasn't working in the first half entirely, this would have been the game that it's like, hey, this might be one where, you know, that game plan you just came up with all week, throw that thing out and let's just try other things that you know will work or maybe are just willing to try at this point in time, because all of this work you just put in for this week, it clearly ain't it. It's not going to work and you need to do something else. And they were totally unwilling to kind of deter. And I do live in a world where it's like, hey, stick with the game plan. You still have Josh Allen, all that. But defensively, there was nothing that was working. Mm-mm. It was pathetic. And it's eventually you have to acknowledge that and just try something new or different in order to see if you get better results. The worst thing that happens in that case is it still doesn't work. And you probably have the exact same, you know, situation as you do in this game where ultimately you allowed 44 points defensively and it just looks terrible.
The Bills had four players on defense that had more than six tackles today. Taylor Rapp, Damar Hamlin, Christian Benford, and Taron Johnson. Look at what of those four players have in common.
They're all in the secondary, Josh.
Yeah, that's not ideal. That's not ideal. I asked that to ask you another question. On a day where the entire defense really struggled, is there a particular area, a particular position group on this defense? You can make it as vague as you want. You can say defensive line. You can say secondary. You can narrow it down to like more specific positions. Is there a specific positional grouping that really has your ire after today?
The interior defensive line, Josh, that would be the one where I just circle it in Sharpie, in multiple color Sharpie, look at it entirely and go, what the hell are we doing here? Because this ain't it and this ain't good. Mm-hmm. Quite simply, I look at that interior defensive line. We can have a discussion about Matt Milano and something that's going on with him, you know, whatever you want to call it, it is there. But the first key to having Matt Milano be successful is keeping him clean. And boy, that did not happen from this interior defensive line. It was borderline pathetic just how incapable this interior defensive line specifically was of keeping the mess at bay in front of them and allowing Terrell Bernard, Matt Milano, whoever else behind them to be able to diagnose what was going on in front of them and clean enough to be able to react to it and make plays happen. I felt like through three quarters, Josh, that didn't happen once. It's no surprise to me whatsoever that Rapp, Hamlin, Benford, and Taron Johnson are your top four tackle getters. That does not surprise me one bit, because at one point in time, I was like, holy shit, Taylor Rapp and Damar Hamlin might combine for the tackle record in this game. It was that bad. And the only reason you have individuals like that, in all the years of these Bills defenses, Josh, when you saw your Jordan Poyers and Micah Hydes getting all the tackles, you knew things were not working. You know, those were the bad New England games where they were just absolutely shredding us on the ground, or any of the Kansas City games, or, you know, the Bengals games where it's like things are getting through that front level. Things are happening where then the linebackers can't stay clean. And next thing you know, it's up to your safety blanket back there or these boundary corners, depending on where the play is progressing, that they need to be able to shed and make a play happen. I mean, to McDermott's credit, that's why he likes the Christian Benfords of the world. They're big, they can shed blocks, and they like to make open field tackles. Not a lot of corners in this league, I will honestly say, like to do those things. But overall, you don't want those guys to be that high in tackles, because that just means the interior defensive line, going back to it, is just not doing a good enough job. The defensive line in general today was very bad. And the interior, though, is the absolute highlight of the problem, where you had problems with Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard. And then finally in the fourth quarter, Terrell Bernard was able to make an impact. And I genuinely believe that was only capable because finally the Rams offensive line was getting tired of bossing things around more than it was the Bills defensive line figuring things out. I'm just going to say that now. And it was really bad to me when you noticed in like back against the wall red zone play, Josh, it wasn't your Ed Oliver in there playing the three technique. It was Johnson. You know, it's Dwayne Carter in there playing the one technique, not Daquan Jones. Like those were the guys that Sean McDermott wanted in there for those moments when it's, you know, second and six at the nine or whatever it might have been. It's like that, that speaks volumes to me. That, that tells me you can point it as that's just part of the rotation. When you're in those moments, that's when coaches want guys they can trust more so to fill the role and do the job that they want them to do. And why are you paying all this money to an Ed Oliver if he's not capable of doing something in that moment when he needs to step up in order to keep this offense at bay in front of him and allow the rest of the defense to do their job? That's why you pay that man that money. And it was just, it was pitiful watching the interior of that defensive line work today, or barely work today.
I don't say this for like the effect. I don't say this to be like, oh, wow, that's a wild take. Like, we don't do that. If you took the names off the back of the jerseys, didn't know anything about this team, I think the best defensive tackle the Bills have had this year has been Elianku, particularly in run stopping. And he's on the practice squad right now. The Bills are currently carrying six defensive tackles on this roster. Ed Oliver, Daquan Jones, Dwayne Carter, those guys aren't going anywhere. But also Jordan Phillips and Quentin Jefferson, and am I forgetting somebody else? I think I'm Austin Johnson.
Austin Johnson, yeah.
Somebody's got to go. We got to get Elianku back up there. I don't care. I don't care who has to go. It's not going to be one of the big three. It's not going to be Ed Oliver, Daquan Jones, or Dwayne Carter, who's a recent third-round pick, and it shouldn't be. I think it needs to be Jordan Phillips, who was an inactive today. You'll get him on the practice squad. Nobody's beating down the door for him. Elianku needs to be out there, and he needs to be out there to help with run support. Cause right now, the Bills, even in their victories, are leaky in run defense. And I get it. It's okay. It's a choice. I get it's a choice. I understand the logic of we want to make teams go the distance of the field on us. They have to show that they can be patient. I get all that. But at some point when teams are running it down your throat consistently, it stops becoming a choice. And the Bills right now, as presently constructed, have to dedicate more resources, particularly with a nickel base where they play Taron Johnson every snap, have to dedicate more resources to stop the run than is ideal. And it sets them up to be vulnerable in passing. And we saw that time and time again today. Stafford kept making the right reads, kept making the right checks, checking to screens whenever the Bills would try to blitz, going to play action, and the Bills were overcommitting. And they had the Bills in a bind today. And it was one game. It happens. But I think having an interior defensive lineman like Elianku, who, you know, he's not Ted Washington. That's not what I'm saying. He's not Haloti Ngata, but he can add some stability to this mix. A larger Ed Oliver conversation, I think, is warranted sooner rather than later. Had zero tackles today. I think, Luca, your point about the interior defensive line being the main thing that bothers you is becoming too much of a disturbing trend with this team. You know, we've had different games where different position groups kind of stood up and were like, oh, that was a bad game, but they got past it. And the interior defensive line has consistently been underwhelming this year, and that's disappointing. I think Daquan Jones is a regressing player. That's unfortunate. Unfortunately, Ed Oliver, who had a welcome to your contract value moment last year, I think he's regressed back to being a streaky player who has some good moments, although it's kind of hard to remember any of those this year. And otherwise is just kind of another player out there. And beyond that, they have a bunch of guys who are just, you know, journeyman level players. They keep trying to tap into the Jordan Phillips well. And, you know, at some point that just can't be the answer. Luca, let's debate the one more McDermott play before we get into game balls and game checks. Prior to, On the Rams' second to last drive, before, not the one they punted, but the one they scored the dagger touchdown to Nacua, there was a third down that Stafford completes a pass or throws it away. It set up a fourth and seven, and it's long field goal range, but there's a holding on the play. And McDermott accepted the holding, made it third and 15, but also subsequently knocked it out of field goal range. I had tweeted from our account, that's a tough decision. I think I'm okay with accepting it there. And then you messaged me pretty quickly thereafter. He's like, oh, if we're going to bring this up on the show, we're going to fight about it. So I don't feel overly passionately about it. A lot of it to me is I like my chances in third and 15. I did think that they were going to kick the field goal on fourth and seven. But when they go for it on 4th and 5, it tells me they probably were going to go for it on 4th and 7 anyway. And the amount of ease they got it with, I tend to think they would have gotten it regardless. But let me know what you don't like, because in fairness to your side of things, you also open your, even though it didn't happen, you open yourselves up to defensive penalties, you know, missed tackles that go for long plays. Anything can happen on that third down that can give you a free first down. So you are taking on risk that even didn't happen.
Quite simply, so just to your point, what happened was 3rd and 7, 4:47 left on the clock. Matt Stafford goes through his progressions, finds absolutely nothing. This is the moment, by the way, when I'm finally believing, like, they're starting to stall out for whatever reason. The Bills defense might be starting to figure things out, at least enough to hold things at bay. And Stafford goes through his progressions, doesn't find anything. It says officially he scrambled to the left for 1 yard. It was basically nothing because it was going to be 4th and 7. And it was 3rd and 7 at the time. What took place was a holding that was a 9-yard penalty. I don't understand how it was 9 yards if it was a passing play. I don't know why you would have a offensive lineman holding 1 yard downfield, but whatever. So be it. I guess it would be that if it's officially stated as a rush play. Whatever. Anyways, it ends up being 3rd and 16 if you accept the penalty. What I don't understand is, it's a stoppage of the clock. What you have is a situation, yes, realistically, in hindsight, they were most likely going to go for it. But psychologically, you're going for it on 4th and 7, right? Rather than giving them this offense 2 opportunities, which then obviously they're going to be playing their third down play, but they're given 2 opportunities to then pick up that first down and or just pick up enough yardage. If they were, say they were going to go for the field goal of death, as we like to call it, they were going to go for the field goal, they could still try to gain yards, whatever they feel is adequate. What in turn took place, of course, is the Bills were not aggressive defensively. They allowed 11 yards. It became a 4th and 5. So they got a net gain of 2 yards on this situation. My point of why you absolutely do not accept that penalty is you are finally creating questions among the Rams. They have to mull that decision over in the moment. And that is a very tough decision to make. You obviously, we've discussed it at length. If you are up 3, in no world should you really be kicking the field goal. But make them make that decision. Force them to make the decision. Are we going to kick this long field goal? Or are we going to go for a 4th and 7? Because 4th and 7 sounds a lot more difficult than 4th and 5 outside of it just being two more additional yards. You don't know it's going to be 4th and 5, of course. If Sean McDermott knew it was going to be 4th and 5, he wouldn't have accepted the penalty. But realistically, my point is more so you're awarding 2 chances to pick up that first down if ultimately they're going to do that, and or just allow them the opportunity to get an automatic first down, as you also pointed out, due to defensive holding, pass interference. The list goes on and on. There are so many other opportunities for them. You're giving them a do-over when you had a net negative play for them, a net positive play for yourself, to create decision or make them make a decision in a very key and opportune moment. On top of it all, the time aspect is important to me, because now that becomes yet another play where you are not possessing the ball and they have an opportunity to do something to the clock. Period. End of story. They need to pick up that first down with 4:47 left. You now gave them another play in which an additional, let's look at it here officially, it was an additional 30. Yeah. So the between 2 plays, 17 seconds plus another 27 seconds. So you're looking at almost 40 seconds off the clock after they had picked it from the moment they picked up the first down to previously when it was 3rd and 15 and 3rd and 16. It's all of these variables where the clock is the most important item in this situation, on top of also just forcing them to make a decision in the moment on the fly as things are going against them. It's almost like you just gave them a little tube of fresh air and you're like, okay, here's an opportunity to figure it out now on 3rd and long where you're no longer in field goal distance. So you're truthfully now fully game planning. It's like, even if only we got a few yards, who says they wouldn't go for it on 4th and 9? I honestly don't know. McVay, there's nothing that tells you that McVay doesn't believe he can't move the ball 10 yards down the field every play. There's nothing that's telling McVay from the entirety of this game that he's not capable of doing that. He can scheme up whatever he wants, whatever money play he wants. It seems to be working right now. So realistically, I don't know what they would do, but McVay is a very aggressive play caller. He's a very aggressive decision maker. And ultimately, I think you just need to force them to make the decision in the moment rather than just award them kind of a do-over coin flip opportunity with a breath of fresh air that also will cost you X amount of time on top of it all for to allow them to do whatever where they have the advantage on the clock right now. It's just ultimately all these variables in mind. There's no reason for me that truthfully you can tell me that the better analytical decision is to accept that penalty because it goes from in field goal range to out field goal range, and or because what's the difference between fourth and five and fourth and seven? Because the difference between fourth and five and fourth and seven is 2 yards literally. And then factually in game flow management wise, that is putting them in a bind because they were unsuccessful at that point in time with what was going on and we were starting to hold things up. And now all of a sudden you flip the script for them and gave them a breath of fresh air. You gave them life. You gave them opportunity and they took full advantage of it from that point on. And that truthfully to me is just an individual who, once again, like we talked about with the timeout situation, just doesn't understand game flow, doesn't understand game management, and just doesn't quite grasp what needs to happen in crunch time, where they look at it as it's almost like it's the Antonio Pierce effect, where it's like kicking the field goal is still okay, even if it's a fourth and two, as it's a 36 yarder, you know, whatever it is. It's like, buddy, go for the damn thing. You're playing the Chiefs. You're doing like, this is modern day football. Those little things matter, and people overanalyze and overthink everything. The Sean McVays do that. Let them overanalyze this situation. Do not award them any do-overs, any breath of fresh air. Let them figure it out on the fly. Do not hand them something like another down of play to then scheme up whatever they want to do game plan wise.
So I didn't mind it. And in the moment I was okay with it. I will say until the Rams went for it, I didn't think they were going to go for it. McVay historically is not an aggressive coach, which is kind of weird when you think about him being a young offensive mind. He had no interest in the field goal of death. It was pretty clear. So I think he probably would have gone for the fourth and seven too. I think McDermott probably was thinking that they were going to kick the field goal. Let's see if we can get a stop on third down and make the field goal longer. Your point about the clock running extra is valid, particularly when you look at how the game ended. In general, I just need a non-soft zone there where they get, you know, they get 10 yards because now the world is open to them again. And, you know, I give McVay credit. You know, he easily could have kicked that field goal, and who wouldn't love the Bills' chances of going down and getting a touchdown there, you know, and winning the game the way Josh Allen was playing. McVay went for the win. I give him credit. You know, I don't think it was an egregious accept by McDermott. I think it's a tough call. I think if the situation's reversed and the Bills decline the penalty and the Rams go out there and make it on fourth and seven, there'd be a large contingent of people saying, well, what the fuck? Why didn't you make it third and 15? They can't go for it on fourth and 15, completely, you know, forgetting the fact that you have the third down play to get 5 or 10 yards. You know, to me, this was one of those things where it's like every time the Rams have the ball, I feel like the Bills were just playing uphill on roller skates. And it was very frustrating. Luca, we have a little bit of a fun moment here, though. We can do game balls and game checks. And game balls is always fun. It's our MVP of the game. And I'll let you go first. Who gets your game ball for the Bills 44-42 loss? Haven't been able to say that in a while. In LA to the Rams.
It's not low-hanging fruit, Josh. It is the fruit. It is the only decision. I'll even give you a pass. You can do your honorable mentions after I mention this person's name, because I don't think anyone stands even close to them. You did mention another individual that deserved the win alongside this individual, but the person that's behind your back, the person that's behind my back, that guy just did something quite literally no one's ever done in this league. He continues to do nothing in the stuff. He continues to do things that no one has ever done in this league. And as we've mentioned before, and we will continue to mention as we move through this season, Josh Allen is your league MVP. And today was an absolute beautiful example of it. And it's because of that performance, Josh, I will be sleeping very easy tonight, because it was art. It was poetry in motion. It was perfection. And everything about that Josh Allen performance, it feels like the best version of selfish to understand that he is a Buffalo Bill and we get the joy of being fans of a team that has that individual, that machine, that Superman under center week in, week out, doing his thing. Josh Allen, you get my game ball of game balls, buddy. What a performance. What a game. It was the least upset I've ever been after a loss, a heartbreaking loss, because it was just like, holy shit, what did we just watch?
Yeah, I'm with you, and I'm not gonna take your offer. I Josh Allen would be my runaway one. Amazing performance. I mean, 10 for 82 on the ground, even 3 touchdowns on the ground. Had a 17-yard scramble that pulled the Bills out of a first and 30 situation. Just an all-around great performance by Josh Allen. You know, I'm with you. There's a comfort tonight that when the head hits the pillow and you're thinking about, it sucks that the Bills lost, you're like, that guy's on our team. Like, we have a shot. Even on a day where nothing else was going right, we have a shot. And this isn't the playoffs. Yeah, if the Bills lose a playoff game by this script, it'll be very frustrating. Yeah. You know, we get it. But this wasn't a playoff game.
No.
And to know that he can still tap into that when he needs to. Because sometimes, you know, on a 4-game playoff run, you might need that from your quarterback once. And it's just nice to know he's on our team, because there's not a lot of teams in the sport that can tap into that. So there's teams out there that started Will Levis today. we are not those teams.
Will Levis versus Mac Jones, game of the day.
It is so funny. I watch a ton of football. I don't think I saw a down that game. I saw one Tony Pollard handoff, because I was watching on Red Zone at that point. And even when that came on, I was like, I don't care. All right, I had Calvin Ridley in DFS. Nobody cares. I'm going to go with Khalil Shakir. I think Mac Hollins deserves a little bit of credit. I mean, this guy every week just is a dog, great in the run blocking game. Josh Allen, reliable weapon. Mac Hollins, I feel like Curtis Samuel, for as disappointing as he's been, Mac Hollins has been the direct opposite. He's meant much more to this team. Curtis Samuel continues just to be an extremely highly paid gadget guy. Still don't know what their vision was when signing him. You know, it was nice to see Amari Cooper out there making some big plays, like that back shoulder play on the third down. That felt like a game extender at that point in time. 6 for 95 there. But Khalil Shakir, 5 for 106 and a touchdown. That touchdown was a thing of beauty. Catch and run, breaking tackles. Josh Allen's easy button. For years, we always talked about third and goal. Things are chaotic. Bills are struggling. Nothing's working. Just hit the easy button, throw a 7-yard pass to Cole Beasley, and keep it moving. Different style of players, but same kind of security blanket. Khalil Shakir is his new Cole Beasley, and I love that. And I think when Kincaid gets back, it's gonna be pretty nice to watch this offense go. Doesn't seem like Kincaid was all that close to playing today, though, so we'll see if he's back for Detroit next week. With the good, there's got to be some bad. And Luca, unlike the last 7 weeks, there's probably going to be a little bit an easier time to come up with some bad. Who gets your game check for the Bills' loss today in LA?
There's plenty of candidates. Mm-hmm. there are plenty of candidates. I almost want to do a player and coach. No, got to keep it to one. Man, it's tough. It's really, really tough. But to be quite frank, a timeout in that moment in time where it truly feels like a panic. There's nothing worse. That Brady said it perfectly during the broadcast. That was the game that you decided at that moment in time that you were willing to take the 7% chance you recover an onside kick rather than the odds of you getting a 3-and-out and having 40 something seconds to drive down the field with an unstoppable number 17. Mm-hmm. And that to me is, if you're not Sean McDermott, and this isn't a 10-win Buffalo Bills team right now, your ass is getting fired. Like, that's how this works. Like, that is inexcusable. That is just wrong in all levels of football and understanding game management. So I look at a lot of things. We talked about interior defensive line. We talked about special teams, all that. But the boss man, the head coach, the individual who has the ability to go like this, who absolutely should have froze his damn hands separately and never let that happen, somehow, some way, made, in my opinion, the right decision. In your opinion, maybe doing something else, but overall went with the money play, had the time to organize what the game plan needed to be, and yet still ran down the sideline and went like this. And that is beyond frustrating because it's like, hey, we have a 7% chance to win this game. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. That is inexcusable, frustrating. So Sean McDermott, game check, buddy.
Yeah, Sean McDermott has to wear this. I was thinking maybe you'd go Matthew Smiley, but you know, that's an extension of Sean McDermott. And yeah. I don't think it tells the story of this game. There were two big blunders on special teams, but the story of this game to me is defense and clock management by McDermott. And he has his hands in both of those things, a large, large portion. So I love that call by you. He would be my choice if I had the ability to choose the one you picked. I'm going to go somebody on defense, and I'm going to go with Ed Oliver. You know, nothing specific from this game, zero tackles, zero pressures, zero impact plays. There's a lot of guys that I thought had disappointing games out there. But, you know, Christian, you know, I'm going to say this real quick, though. I should have mentioned Christian Benford in my game ball as a honorable mention. I know they gave up 44 points. They couldn't stop anybody, but very little bit of that had to do with Christian Benford. He was like the only player out there that was consistently making plays, but that's neither here nor there. Ed Oliver, the Bills are just not getting enough out of Ed Oliver this season. They didn't get enough out of him today. You wonder if that player just doesn't exist anymore, or maybe there's an injury we don't know about. I never thought he was great, but at least at times he was good, and he hasn't been good at all this year. In fact, he's been quite average, and that's very disappointing for a team that looks like they're championship ready, but two players that we were counting on both of them pretty highly coming into this year, Ed Oliver and Daquan Jones, both regressing, looks like it could be complicating for this team. Up next, Luca, the 10-3 Buffalo Bills travel to Detroit. It does not get easier to take on the current one seed, one loss Detroit Lions in Detroit. Good news, Lions have a laundry list of injuries on defense, and I think that this Bills offense, while they cannot afford to get out to a slow start, I think they should be able to muster up some good offense on this Detroit Lions defense. But boy, oh boy, Luca, you watch this game today, you see what McVay had schemed up. It's hard to feel good about the Bills defense in this matchup next week when you talk about a physical, athletic offensive line in Detroit. For my money, the best offensive line in the sport. Weapons galore. You talk about Laporta, Gibbs, Montgomery, St. Brown, Jameson Williams, and they know how to use those guys. They know how to move them around. Goff is playing the best ball of his career. He and Ben Johnson are in lockstep, and they have a kicker that doesn't miss. So it feels like next week could set up, hopefully I'm wrong, it could set up for another game where if Josh Allen doesn't put the cape on and score 40, or maybe the Bills can get the running game going and shorten the game. It could be another ugly game for this Bills team.
This is quite simply the game. And to the point of kind of what I've come out of the Rams game, where I went into this at Rams at Lions stretch going, we're probably going 1-1. Now, realistically, that one loss, I believed it to be in Detroit. I don't like the matchup. I'm with you 1,000%. This is the best, most physical, dominant offensive line in the NFL right now. They are. Penei Sewell is just the greatest thing since sliced bread on the offensive line. I've never seen as big of a man move and dominate in such a way. It's like you want to watch. I know he's a right tackle, but I want to watch Vita Vea versus Penei Sewell over and over again. Just the two largest, most athletic individuals in the league. Like, if you had to go most athleticism per pound, they would probably be up there, both of them. They're incredible. Anyways, I digress. The Lions, though, I feel like are going to dominate things offensively. It will just come down to making Goff make a few mistakes. And those mistakes are in his bag. We saw it against the Texans, who are not exactly world beaters on defense or defensive masterminds in the coaching department. You know, I'm not disrespecting them. It's just, I don't think they're quite there yet, you know, all together. But as you said, their defense is just banged up left and right. I don't see where they stop us. And now you have to go steal that win in a place that individuals like myself thought you would lose. And next thing you know, you can come out of this in the exact same place you expected to be with just Patriots, Jets, at Patriots remaining on your schedule. I think I did that in order. Don't quote me if I didn't. But ultimately, that's what you have down the stretch. And this is really that last time where you have a true test and you're going to have a great football game. This is like NBC, ESPN, you know, all of these, they have to be kicking themselves that they didn't outbid Fox. I believe it's on Fox. No, actually, this is CBS, I believe. They didn't outbid CBS, whoever got it, for this game, because this feels like it absolutely should have been a spotlight game. And, you know, this is to the definition of it, what feels like a potential Super Bowl rematch. It'll be in, I think, the national media from Wednesday on. I can't wait for it personally, but realistically, you just have to flip the script now of what, you know, an individual like myself thought. You lost the Rams game. Now go win the Lions game. And if there's anything, if you're a Lions fan out there that you don't want to be seeing right now, it's a really pissed off and motivated Bills team who at their best as that number 17 guy that can quite literally do everything possible. And you will not probably have any answers for it. Terry Arnold on that outside is going to see something that he thinks he saw at Alabama, but boy, he's going to be like, how the hell was this guy playing college football at Wyoming when he is just absolutely shredding them apart? We just experienced a game of the year, what feels like, Josh. And now in the Jared Goff track of this season, we're going from LA to Detroit and what I believe has all the makings of what actually could become the game of the year. This feels like it's setting up like a, it's not to the absolute level of like Chiefs Rams was in 2018, but it's like, man, these are two teams right now. Josh Allen's on, he's a V8 on all cylinders, and the Ben Johnson offense for the Lions is just absolutely doing whatever they want at will off extended rest as well, which kind of feels pretty shitty for us, but it's just the luck of the draw. And yeah, it feels like one where the offenses should have the better days for both sides. And last team to have the ball will win. And everyone better buckle up. It's going to be an absolute gem in my eyes.
Hey, Sean McDermott, you can redeem yourself next week. Yeah. Slow down the Lions. Your defense is fully healthy. Maybe Rasul Douglas misses, but you got your horses. Slow them down.
Kyrie Elam active for the game now that Rasul's out?
Oh, he's got to be.
He has to be, right?
It'll be interesting to see if Kyrie Elam starts over Ingram if Rasul Douglas doesn't play. That'll tell us a lot. Good opportunity for Ingram or for Elam or Ingram. But yeah, this is the Bills defense. Today was an awful day. In general, the Bills defense has been pretty good. They need to bring their A game next week because, you know, it's fun to beat up on the Seahawks and they'll be in the playoffs. It's fun to beat up on the Niners when they're reeling, and it's fun to beat up on the Chiefs and you know, they'll be in the playoffs, but you're going to get to a point where you're going to play offenses that know what they're doing if you want to win this whole thing. And it can't look like Baltimore, and it can't look like today against the Rams. And that's what these Bills have 4 more weeks left to solve before the money games start. And this is a team that's fully capable, Luca, of giving us that parade we've been longing for our entire lives. But there's some leakiness on this defense now. Reared its head today, and doesn't mean it's going to be there next week against Detroit. In fact, it wouldn't stun me if the Bills come up with a great game plan and really slow down the Lions. I think they're going to need some complimentary football from the offense to help them with that. But I feel, you know, it's so weird. I feel good about the Bills' chances next week. It's early in the week. You know, injuries are going to pop up. Guys that we didn't even know got banged up in this game are going to be questionable, and it could change the whole landscape of the game. But, you know, I'm not, I know you love this saying, I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater after one game where they lost to a desperate Rams team in their building when the Rams were basically, they had a great coaching performance and a great execution performance. It happens in this league all the time. Bills are still a very good team, still have everything in front of them, except maybe it seems like the one seed died today with a 2-point loss to the Rams and the Chiefs getting another 2-point victory over the Chargers. It would take now 2 Chiefs losses and the Bills winning out. Not doable, but you know, it's harder to dream about at this point in time. Luca, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Last thought, Josh. Your Arizona State Sun Devils are, in fact, in the college football playoffs. And The Sabres were dog shit. The Bills, heartbreaking loss. And yet, I will say, personally, I am on cloud nine. Because I don't have to sit there and enjoy an ASU football game until January 1st. Something that I don't think I've quite literally watched ever in my lifetime. Like, that might be the latest Arizona State football game I will ever watch. And it's because they earned their spot into the Peach Bowl January 1st. Unfortunately, at 1 o'clock Eastern for a West Coast team that earned a bye feels a little shitty, but is what it is. And I will thoroughly enjoy December 21st, Josh, when Texas is playing Clemson for the right to go to Atlanta, Georgia and play the Arizona State Sun Devils in the college football playoffs. And I am going to milk this for so long. The Scataboo, the ASU Sun Devils, are in the college football playoffs. They earned a bye. And oh, by the way, they were projected to be 16 of 16 in the Big 12. They were supposed to win four games all season. And yet somehow, some way, they blew the doors off Iowa State at the AT&T Stadium in the Big 12 championship. And it is just football's back and football's amazing. I love it. We got to watch Josh Allen on Sunday. I got to watch Cam Scataboo be the greatest running back that isn't Ashton Gentry at AT&T, at Jerry World. And Arizona State's going to be playing on New Year's Day, Josh, in the Peach Bowl. And I hope to hear that you watch that game because it's going to be something special.
Well, I'll be watching. I'm going to watch this whole thing. Hell yeah. I was disappointed that Alabama didn't make it over SMU. I mean, they have three losses. It's hard to feel too bad for Alabama, but when you look at their resume, they have three wins over ranked teams. I think South Carolina is like excellent, and that was a good win by them.
Don't lose to Oklahoma by 20 plus points.
That's the one. Oklahoma is a team that just had looked like terrible.
Terrible.
And there, you know, there were circumstances. They lost their quarterback. Their offensive line was all beat up, but you know, they were getting their doors blown off by South Carolina, ironically enough. But when I look at this bracket, there's not a team that stands out to me this year as like the best team in the country. And I suppose Oregon has a claim to that, but man, they beat Ohio State by an eyelash, and it really came down to Ohio State just failing to get a field goal attempt off late. And Ohio State could be the ones that play Oregon in the second round if they beat Tennessee. If I were you, I'd be rooting for Clemson to beat Texas. That's just me. I think Texas is excellent.
The weird part is, though, Josh, it's like you either get Clemson in their backyard,
yeah,
on an early start in Atlanta, or, as you're saying, you get Texas. And it's like, yeah, the playing a big-ass defensive line. And I only look at the defenses because, honestly, offensively, who knows what you're going to get from the ASU defense. So it is what it is. What I look at is the defense, and it's like, we need a team that we can run against. And by we, I mean Arizona State, of course. And it's like, Cam Scataboo has the greatest balance of any football player I feel like I've ever seen, and he is just a freak of a human being. But Texas is a big defense. Mm-hmm. Now, ASU has a big offensive line, which is kind of not usual in the Big 12, at least. You normally want your more agile, athletic guy. Spread offense is the typical thing, but ASU is not your typical offense, that's for sure. And losing I think he was the 10th receiver in the nation in Jordan Tyson, that feels alleviated because what we saw in the Big 12 championship was like, they're okay. Guillory's a dog. But overall, Texas could impose their will in the trenches, which would make it more difficult than usual for Scataboo. And instead of getting those 12 yards on, you know, 10 yards after contact, he's going to be getting 4 yards after being contacted 2 yards in the backfield. And that's not a recipe for success for the ASU.
I think Notre Dame will make pretty quick work of Indiana, personally, just based on what I've seen from those two teams.
Although, what a fun game, by the way. State of Indiana playoff
area,
awesome.
And boy, oh boy, you'd hate to be a Notre Dame fan, like, because Indiana's always been a basketball school. And to have Indiana have a playoff victory over Notre Dame when it'll probably never happen again, like that's going to be intense for that area. I mean, I was just dogging on SMU. I think they can absolutely beat Penn State. I may not predict it to happen. I think Notre Dame versus Georgia in the second round has a chance to steal the show. I think both of those teams at their best are as good as any two teams in the country, but they both are kind of roller coaster rides. I would not be surprised at all if Notre Dame can knock off Georgia, though. And then I think Ohio State is very live if they beat Tennessee and they go on and play Oregon in the second round. It's going to be a fun playoff bracket. It's hard to say that anybody got left out when they moved to 12. That's the one benefit of moving it to 12. It's like, well, what about, so, well, okay, be in the top 12. You know, that's the argument.
I think the greatest thing that happened, Josh, is last year when it was four teams, you would have seen a team that probably won a lesser conference like you had now, which would be, let's say, Boise State or Indiana, whose only loss is at the Horseshoe against Ohio State team. You know, they got handled. I wouldn't call it a blowout. They got handled at least. And that was their only loss of the season, be left out because you would have had Texas come in as the SEC loser with then Georgia, Oregon, and then I think Penn State would have been in there as the big. It would have quite literally been, if you look at the rankings, it would have been a Big Ten versus SEC Invitational. It would have just completely ignored everyone else, and that's what the playoff would have been. And the controversy would have been real. The controversy this year was a one-loss plus conference champion loss in walk-off fashion, SMU, over a Bama team who, yes, had incredible wins, but also had some really bad losses. And it's like, don't lose three games. Don't get blown out by a 6-6 Oklahoma team. And it was never a conversation in the first place.
And losing to Vanderbilt was bad too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, losing to Vanderbilt's not good, but that Oklahoma loss to me, it checks the box of bad timing. And also it was just a bad, bad look. And you cannot do that if you're Alabama and you're at three losses. Mm-hmm. And what I love is the committee did decide that effectively conference championship losses affect maybe where you stand, but they still value it and they still value that you made it there. And this is where it all stands. And on top of it all, my opinion, the best thing that happened was Clemson didn't just magically spike up because they beat SMU in the fashion that they did. It was like, no, you won your conference. Your ranking went up two spots. You're the 16th ranked team in the nation, but because you won your conference and you're the next best highest ranked conference champion, you are in the college football playoff. But SMU, even in the way that they lost, is still ranked above you. And here they are now getting to play Penn State because of it. Like, I actually like how that all shaped out. I think that's valid. I think it all makes sense way more than what we saw in the four team. And also, for what it's worth, I think this cutoff line is a lot better than what you hear people saying. Well, now they just need to go to 16 and get rid of buys. And it's like, that's too much.
Yeah.
Because now you're starting to get into teams that just, are they a playoff team? That 16 seed is just like, really? That's the team you have in having a shot at the college football playoff or the college football championship? It's like, no, it 12 feels like actually a pretty good number overall. That, it's just on top of it all, Josh, this was a pretty chaotic college football season, which in my eyes was gold to EA and NCAA 25. Cause I think that game plus this season has really built up college football. And it feels like a year that's on the rise in college football standards for the first time in a while. I feel like it's kind of been teetering where no one respected it too much until the CFP came around, because it's just the Bama Georgia show or the Ohio State Georgia Bama. You know, this is just a rotating theme. It's like now you have some true parity thanks to NIL and everything else interest wise, on top of seeing some, you know, real losses happen for those bigger programs that had them ultimately stay out, being Alabama.
You know what I just thought about? And I agree with you. I think that the video game did wonders for college football this year. Ohio State is a team that maybe could have been left out.
Yeah.
They had the loss in Oregon, which, you know, number one team in the country, you lose by 1 point, you live with it, but barely beating Nebraska. They beat Penn State in Penn State. That's not nothing. That's obviously big, but they got beat by Michigan on their own home field, and Michigan is just terrible this year by Michigan standards. I don't know. I think, Alabama got blown out by Oklahoma. That's going to be the
two losses over three, and the losses were worse for Bama. That's just, that's the reality of it. Hey, You beat Georgia, the SEC champ. That's great.
You beat South Carolina and Mizzou,
too. Don't forget, you were literally just one good defensive play from a corner away from losing that game.
Yeah.
Like, that's how close that was. And then you got blown out by Oklahoma. You lost to Vanderbilt. You barely beat South Carolina. It just took South Carolina managing the game like absolute shit at the end for you to lose. I mean, there's just Bama to me does feel like the appropriate first out team kind of deal in this tournament. It's like, yes, they are a very good team. They aren't quite there because they just couldn't get it done when they needed to in certain situations. And I just don't think the resume speaks highly enough for them to go over a team that feels a little bit more deserving, like your SMU, even though they're a lesser team and they might have had a weaker strength of schedule. They still won the games in front of them. They still did everything they needed to. And the only reason they didn't get the auto bid, and ASU thankfully got that auto buy, I mean, as well, is because they lost by giving up a 40-something yard kick return, one 12-yard play up the middle of the field, and a walk-off 57-yard field goal, which in college standards is basically like Justin Tucker hitting a 68-yarder, I feel like. That is no gimme by any stretch of the imagination, and that's somehow how you lost the conference and just is what it is.
All right. Well, the Bills haven't lost their conference. Hopefully they win it this year. That'd be nice. That's a terrible transition. But, you know, it's after midnight where Luca's at. It's almost midnight where I'm at. Luca, we'll be back next week. Major showdown next week. Some are calling it a potential Super Bowl preview. That'd be something. Man, that'd be sweet. But either way, the Bills are going to the playoffs. We know that. Josh Allen is going to win MVP. We think we know that, barring injury. And the Bills are going to be playing the Lions next week in another game that all eyeballs will be on the Bills game. Before things get pretty quiet for the Bills, there'll be a three-game stretch where I think as long as the Bills don't lose, the league will kind of forget about them for a while because Patriots, Jets, Patriots is just not going to move the meter too much. But Luca and I will be back next week. All things Bills, Lions. And until then, for Luca, I am Josh McCarty. We will see you next week on Bills Chat.